a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast. And for this interview, I'm going to be joined by Chris Santana. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you, Nate?
I am doing awesome. Busy, but awesome. So Chris has decided to become a sponsor to the podcast. So what do you actually do with your company, and why did you decide to basically join the Cue It Up family?
Well, actually, I'll answer your second question first. In terms of why I decided to join, you seem to have a great product. You are very light on your feet with your interviews and your podcasts. Very insightful. You got some great guests, and I think that you've got a pretty big market that I'd like to, you know, help out with and bring more people to my business through your podcast. So that's why I decided to help you out and jump on and. So far, all of your interviews and all of your podcast shows have been pretty amazing, to be honest. Like I said, very light, very entertaining as well, especially with your cohort. I'm blanking on his name for the second.
Rob?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's hilarious. I think he's a great sidekick for you. So that's the reason why I decided to sponsor your podcast. And I know it's been a couple of weeks and we've been trying to, you know, sync up. So I'm glad that we're able to talk. So I'll discuss in brief my company, Fastenless Designs. I started this back in 2006. I had just started college and I was majoring in industrial design, which is basically product design. I had visions of becoming a designer in the electronics and consumer products industry, which I am now, and I'll go over that later. But so I started in 2006, basically just designing some graphics and some posters, some event flyers for a couple of different pool halls where I'm from. I'm just outside of LA in California. And so I was doing things like events and like menus for different bars that also held pool tournaments. And slowly I started doing more and more of those. I wasn't charging anything at the time because I was very new to graphics. My education is in, like I said, product design. I have a bachelor's degree in design with an emphasis on product design. But a lot of my experience comes from graphics. And so I started really challenging myself to design new things, to learn the software. And it was fun because I got to promote events that I was playing in. I got to see my work all over LA, and it was pretty rewarding that I was being recognized for that, and people were coming to me after a while rather than me going to them at, you know, promoting my work. So around 2006, 2007, 2008, I started doing a lot more promotion. I finally had, you know, gotten through the door into Hard Times in Bellflower in California. In LA, not in Sacramento. And I was able to promote a couple of major events that they had, coinciding with like Mika Immonen. He had started a 10 ball tournament. I think that was back in like 2007 or 2008. And I kept doing promotion, and then I decided, or it was almost like, just a side thing. I decided to start making some t-shirts. The very first t-shirt I made, which I still sell and is still one of my best-selling t-shirts, it says Sandbagger on the t-shirt. It was like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of ironic t-shirt. It's made to look like the Predator logo. And at the time, it was just really popular. A lot of my friends were buying it for me. I didn't really have a website at the time. It's just people wanted to support me and wanted to wear something that was kind of funny. And it was like a kind of like an inside joke. Like, you didn't really get what that meant unless you were a pool player. And a pool player that saw that shirt immediately understood what that t-shirt was all about. And so I kind of took that and I've made dozens and dozens of t-shirts that have that same flavor, or it's very much about. It's parody. It's you know, ironic kind of t-shirts that derive from other logos in or out of the industry, and that sort of spawned the apparel side of the business. So I had started it just as an event promoter and making posters and logos and graphics, and then it just became apparel. And I've worked with a lot of different companies in the industry since then, and I exited the industry officially a couple of years ago, and now it's just apparel, and it's a very much of a side thing. It's not something I rely on for income. It's just, it's fun. It's an outlet for me to design graphics. Since I don't really design graphics at work, I'm more of a product designer. And it's fun for pool players to wear, you know, cool shirts, apparel, hats, jackets, hoodies, all that to the pool hall when they go play at league night. And so a couple of the companies that I've worked for are like Mez Q's. I'm currently the marketing director for the Mez West Bay Tour, which is the only tour here on the West Coast. We used to be in Arizona, California, and now it's mostly California, and we've just branched out into Oregon. So that's been a very fun ride for me. I've gotten to hang out with some of the best pool players in the world, from Mika to Rodney to Oscar. You know, it's been pretty much an eye-opener into the industry as a whole. And plus, obviously, I've been able to play alongside them. I've done photography of a lot of players. I've built their website, social media. I'm not as involved as I used to be, and a lot of that has to do with my career change. But I do still do all of the graphics and the promotion for the Mez West Bay Tour. Worked with Mez Q's, who also owns like a Turtle Rack, Van Tips. I've worked with AccuStats and the U.S. Open via On the Wire, On the Wire Creative Media. I previously worked with Bo Runnigan and Raw Hanna at On the Wire. We, all three of us, well, they had sort of started it before I jumped in, and they brought me in to do graphics and marketing while they handled the business side of things. And it was, you know, a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of great people, a lot of more pool players, and it opened up the door for us to work with the U.S. Open. And obviously, I wouldn't have been able to work with them had it not been for Raw and Bo to really establish that relationship with Pat Fleming. And so I did all of the graphics and promotion for that year. I believe that was 2016 U.S. Open. Did all the posters, flyers, event promotion, a lot of social media, a lot of some email marketing, I believe we did, and really fun. And that was the only year that we did it because soon after, as you know, Matchroom took over the U.S. Open, and obviously they can do a much better job. But some of the companies I've worked with are like American Rotation. I did a lot of marketing for them, did some promotion over here in California for them, and ran a couple of leagues. And then also, by the way, through On the Wire, I've done websites for some players that you know, like April Larson. I did her website, which I'm not sure if she still has that up. I haven't checked on it in a while. But also Chris Robinson and a few other players, Ashley and Haley Fullerton. I think you may know them as well because they're with DEF. I think you had them on, or you had April on at one time. Is that correct?
I've had April on, yes. She is the best.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. So I luckily got to, you know, be able to work with her. We did photography of her, and then built out her whole website. And so that was a lot of fun. The junior players are obviously the future. And not only are they the future, those individual players, but I think that the junior player market in general. So I've also worked like with BCA, CSI, the BEF to a limited capacity. And so I do have quite extensive relationships with some of those bigger names in the industry. It was a lot of fun. You know, and I wish I had done more. I wish I could stay in the industry and keep on working with players and with companies. It's just, as you may know, it's a hard industry to make money in. It was very bittersweet to have to walk away from doing that full time. It was just hard to put money on the table. You know what I mean? So So I then transitioned the entire business to purely apparel and mostly t-shirts. I did realize that there's a pretty big demand for t-shirts in the industry, and I've been doing this since 2006, so I finally decided to just build out the website to just focus on that and not really on any marketing or design services that I used to provide. So all the posters and stuff that I've done before, I don't really do that anymore. Every now and then I'll have somebody that will come to me and ask me, hey, can you help me out with this flyer or this poster? And in some cases I can help, but for the most part, it's not even so much about money anymore. It's really just the time. I'm now working as a full-time creative lead for a cannabis packaging company. We design packaging products for the industry, not the actual cannabis itself, but just packaging things like jars, tubes, boxes, packaging for them. So all of my time is tied up there, but I do still miss it sometimes. And I keep I keep plugged into the industry via my website and via things like the Mesa West State Tour. I don't play as much as I used to. Got married and having a kid on the way this year. So that's the priority now, is that for the most part. And so also in working with all of these companies, I've gotten to understand the strengths and weaknesses of marketing and branding strategies from company to company. There are plenty of companies in the industry that do incredible work. Obviously, Matchroom Sport being what I consider to be the leader in that regard. Great marketing, production quality, obviously from top down is just it's world class. If you didn't see the pool table, you would have guessed that this was any other sport or any other large production or some kind of game or some kind of a show. And so that really shows how Matchroom has really surpassed the industry in terms of its marketing expertise. Other brands are like, CSI is very high up there as well. They've come a long way. I think in the last couple of years, Ozzy and his team have really brought forth marketing to a new level. And when I say marketing, I'm not just referring to how they get the word out. I'm talking about the actual ways in which they do that, the strategies via branding, graphics, posters, websites, and especially number one being social media. Social media, I think, in the industry is really the only way that companies are marketing themselves. And I think that should be the number one way, but sometimes the other aspects of marketing are forgotten about. And so also like Predator has, I think in terms of product or cube manufacturing in general, I really think that Predator has set the bar, and they represent the highest level of product promotion and advertising. Everything from their videos to logos that they've created to all their graphics, the packaging, the boxes that products come in. It's very evident that the leadership within that company knows what they're doing. And as I said, for Matchroom, if you didn't know that was a Q product, the standards for packaging and graphics in general are just, they're second to none. A couple of others are like that I can think of are like MezQs has great websites and branding and marketability as well. And, AZ Billiards, for instance, as you're pretty familiar with them, that website is a behemoth. Like that, aside from the forums, even just all the news and promotion that goes on for the industry is incredible. So I do want to mention that those companies are really, if you're trying to understand how to better market yourself or what kind of tools that you need to get on a higher level, even if you're not trying to get to that maximum level, you can at least see what they do and understand why they got to where they are. And sure, money and quality go to a certain level, but marketability, branding, advertising, putting a beautiful look to your brand is highly critical, especially when there's so much competition within an industry and everybody's basically fighting for crumbs, as I'm sure that you know. And so in my experience, websites, not really as important as they used to be, especially when we're talking about event promotion. And I think that event promotion was one of my stronger suits in terms of branding those and creating graphics for them. Getting the word out is another thing, like knowing how to tap into the different tools that, for instance, Facebook or Instagram had. That's a different level of skill that I briefly touched on. Now that social media has gotten even more in-depth, I'm sure that you have your own techniques for how you want to promote, queue it up, and how you have to go through all these different channels to make sure that people understand what you do and tune into your podcast. It's a very broad field for getting the word out. And so I always focused on things that were related to branding. And branding is a very, very broad term, but it basically refers to things like your logo, what colors you use, the consistency in which you promote your graphics, and whether or not you're using the same fonts, whatever kind of style you have. Like, I can tell that, based on your logo, it's a very fun, friendly, light feeling. Whereas, CSI or Matchroom are a little bit more on the serious, player perspective. And so, the feel or the style in which you promote yourself is also very important in terms of separating yourself from everybody else. So I have a couple of tips for people out there that are making posters or making flyers and making promotional material. And a lot of the things that I see that could be improved upon are things like how much information you're putting on your posters. I'm sure that you go to events all the time, Nate, where you see posters that have way too much information on them for what they really are. People just need to know how much does it cost, what's the date and time, what game we're playing. I see things like, who's going to rack, how often you're going to break. Races are important as well, but sometimes I just see too much information on them. I think that's probably a very easy way to reduce the amount of clutter and really bring out graphics and photography a lot of times in promotional materials. And one of the other things that I noticed is that paying a lot of attention to your sponsors is important. Making sure that their logo is something that is easily recognizable. You're not, throwing a JPEG that was, taken from a quick, clip from the web. Really treating your sponsors as though they are one of the most important things about that event is pretty important, in my opinion. And that also, brings up questions about how sponsorships in general are accounted for. And I'm not referring to yours, by the way, but like I see a lot of sponsors that will sponsor an event and they get mentioned very, very rarely or in passing. Or I see a lot of players that will have great sponsors and they don't quite do enough for those sponsors. And so when it comes to marketing, I think players could actually gain a lot from doing more for their sponsors. Getting more sponsors is always the goal. And if brands and companies see that you are, that they see you as a conduit for their brand, and like, oh, this player talks about his sponsors a lot. I want to get on that. Even if that player isn't the best in the world, if they're a junior player that's up and coming, or if they're a top level amateur, talking about your sponsors is the number one way, in my opinion, that you would get more. It seems like it's kind of like a no-brainer, but it surprises me that's not something that's very much talked about in the industry. Any particular player might have 5 sponsorships, and we only know that they're sponsored if we have a close-up of their patch on their shirt or if they put a quick hashtag at the end of a photo. I try to encourage players, especially when I was working with them through On the Wire. One thing that we really tried to push these players for was treat your sponsors as though they are the number one reason, aside from you being a great player, they are the number one reason why you are able to make a living or able to at least pay your way into a particular event. Or, they are a very big part of your success. And I think that isn't really talked about. I think it's like, oh, I got sponsored. I'll wear a patch and maybe once a month I'll, you know, mention them at the end of a post. I always try to encourage people to maybe have a post that's just about your sponsor. Or, you know, if you're sponsored by a queue, have a video or two every once in a while where you talk about what the strengths are of that, why it makes it different. Take photos. Like, I see the problems in the industry from a marketing side, whereas obviously there's, you know, as you know, many different reasons why the industry could or couldn't be suffering. And when I look at it, I'm seeing it from that marketing side and why certain things don't improve and why sponsors may, you know, lean towards one player or the other. And so I think you've probably seen that in the industry as well, Nate. And I know I'm going on and on, but I wanted to know what your thought is on that and how you see sponsorships in the industry working.
I definitely agree with you that I'll use a generic term here and say that we as a whole do not take care of our sponsors probably as well as we should, especially some of the bigger streaming companies. They kind of have their sponsors' logos somewhere on the screen, whether it's, you know, top or bottom or left or right, out of the way of the action. And they're kind of usually faded into the background where there's just kind of like a ghost outline of it. And then you'll go through a match and you might not hear a single one of those sponsors the entire time. There are some that do it worse than others, and there's some that are better than others. But I definitely agree that with you that if we're going to get the sponsorship money in here, we got to feel like the sponsors are actually getting their money's worth and some sort of a return back.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. There are plenty that do a great job of that. I think that some of the streams from the East Coast do incredible work on that and to make sure that their sponsors are recognized. I know that Raw Hanna from On the Wire, he's still streaming into that. He does a great job to make sure that everybody knows, you know, support those who support you. That's like his tagline, and that can't be more true. Like, but also making sure that people know who those sponsors are and what they do and how they are different in the industry. And so, yeah, streams are definitely an area which could use improvement. So if you're a streamer or if you're a sponsor, you know, demand a higher level of exposure for either yourself or for the friend that is supporting your stream and generating the revenue for you. Because as I said, the more you do that, the more sponsors you'll get. If I'm a brand and I'm sponsoring a stream and they mention me, you know, several times, more than just once or more than just my graphic on the screen, that is already like a lot more than currently exists. And I know that a lot of people may not realize that because most of the time players and spectators that are watching, they're not really thinking about that. They're more focused on the game, which they, you know, generally should be, but the sponsors, I guarantee you, are noticing that. And it's a little bit strange to me that it's not something that is discussed very much, because if you look at other sports, and obviously we can, you know, have the comparison of sports all day in regards to what we fall short on, but they don't necessarily have to do that so much because there's already millions of dollars involved, right? So one quick, you know, view on the screen is going to reach, you know, potentially millions and millions of people, whereas we're talking about hundreds or a few thousand of people. So there has to be a little bit more meat in that. You have to probably spend a little bit more time discussing those sponsors because the audience is very small compared to other industries. And I'm not talking about, you know, spending a lot of time. Just saying, you know, let's try and elevate that professionalism when it comes to respecting your sponsors and whatnot. And so I think that is a subject that could use a lot more discussion. If you are a sponsor and you are on a stream, or if you're on a poster and you don't feel that they are, you know, featuring you prominently enough or whatnot, you know, speak up, raise that bar. Get more sponsorships. If you treat your sponsors well, people will notice and you will get more of them, guaranteed. And that's purely just logical, obviously, but I've also seen it happen. On the Meds West Bay Tour, we try to do that as well, and that's also Raw from On the Wire that does that streaming. We we make sure that we mention all of the sponsors at least in between matches, and I think even between racks, sponsors are brought up in different order and briefly talk about them and talk about maybe if there's something new that's coming out. And that's not really something that Raw is really being paid for. He just knows what's going on, and he will mention new things that are happening. Oh, by the way, like for instance, JD Cases, as you just had JD on recently. We'll talk about, you know, JD and where he'll be at next, for instance, or where you can find his products, things like that. Rather than just a quick mention or a quick graphic, I think sponsors need to be, you know, probably elevated a little bit more. And we can talk about this till the cows come home, but I did want to mention that I feel is something that the industry should take a closer look at and hold to a higher standard.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Okay, so there's one thing I would like to go back to, if you're okay with that. Earlier on, you said kind of that we have to do a better job of marketing, but you also said kind of in the same breath that you realize that there really isn't a lot of money in this game and we're all kind of competing over the same dime. How do you then give advice to somebody who doesn't have maybe a bigger marketing budget to be able to do a better job without spending a bunch of money?
Sure. And I would probably start with some of the events that we see or money matches that happen that are like, you know, 20, 50,000 in the middle, but you can easily tell that they spent $10 on the poster for it. You know, and there's plenty of, there's a lot of actually action matches that have great, you know, photography and graphics that come with it, because let's remember that in order to get somebody's attention, you may not realize it, but a lot of times in advertising, you have to grab them in order to get them to listen to what it is that you're trying to sell them. And I think if you probably just base your budget on a percentage, and I'm not saying, you know, find a design agency to make your posters or flyers, but at least hold whoever is creating that to a certain standard, at least in regards to your sponsors and the pertinent information that's going to go on there. So, like, sometimes I'll see that the most important thing that's on there is that it's a race to three. Why is that the largest thing on the flyer when that's obviously not the most important thing that I should be concerned about? But to answer your question, if you are, you know, a small event promoter, what I try to tell people is find a student, or I'm sure everybody has a friend of a friend, you know, posting on Facebook or posting out a request. You're going to find people that are very good at marketing who may or may not charge you almost anything at all. And I think it just requires a little bit of homework. I think some promoters might go straight to their niece or nephew who took Photoshop for a semester, and they think, oh, they can maybe make my promotion for, you know, the 200 people that I want to have in my event. I think it just takes one little notch more of effort in terms of maybe researching where you can find that. And anybody who's out there that needs help, I'm more than willing to, you know, if I can't help, I can definitely, and I have done this, steer people towards resources or people that I know that are interested in that. They are up-and-coming designers that may or may not be in the industry at all. Sometimes you actually want people that are outside the industry, because they're gonna take a stab at promoting your event in a way that you wouldn't have thought of. For instance, I have a friend, he's a graphic designer, and he mostly does album covers for local bands and whatnot. And I had him do a graphic for me about a year and a half ago. He helped me with some background graphics for an event. And the way that he tackled it was like a way that I never would have thought. And he's a sophomore in his program, the design program. And he's, you know, very excited about doing things that are outside of his normal realm. So I think that if you're an event promoter, you're not sure where to go, you know, you can always reach out to me, or you could put out posts about, hey, I need some help with this. Maybe that's part of the problem, is that a lot of people don't like to ask for help, and they think maybe I should just do it myself. But, you know, there's no harm in asking for help. You're going to find somebody out there who has some level of expertise. and maybe they're only an expert in social media. They know their ins and outs of Instagram, how to create an Instagram story, how to create an Instagram ad that will pass the ad requirements, or Facebook ads, or how to make a quick video with a couple of images. You know, these kinds of things are very basic, and people are doing this everywhere that aren't even experts at it. I think we just need a little bit of a push in that regard. And I brought this up a long time ago in a thread on Easy Builder. I'm sure you know what that typically goes like. You get a lot of trolls and get a lot of people who will, you know, trash talk, and it's kind of ridiculous. But I brought up this point that the industry needs to elevate itself in terms of the marketing, and I got a lot of people saying, "What are you talking about, man? Graphics don't matter. It's all about, you know, how much money is in it, or what the rules are going to be, or this or that." But we all know that hasn't necessarily brought the industry up to a higher level. I'm just saying that it works elsewhere, and a lot of people don't. They fail to understand the value of marketing, and I like to give this example. Usually, no matter where you live, there's small businesses on any given street. And if you drive down any main stretch of road on your main street in your hometown, probably 90% is small business, unless you're in a big city or in a very commercial district. If you're driving down that street, most of the signage that you see is not prominent. It's not well done. It's not built out in any way to grab your attention. But I guarantee you that McDonald's sign is very large, very prominent. You're going to see the AMC theater. A sign is very big. Pizza Hut, whatever it might be. And it's not that you already know that logo, but it's out there. It's in your face. It's really well done. Maybe that restaurant isn't very good. We all know McDonald's, it doesn't have the best burgers, but they have the best marketing. They have lots of advertising everywhere. And you may say to yourself, "Oh, well, I go to this mom and pop shop. They have the best burgers in town." And you may be right. They might have the best burgers you've ever tasted in your life. But if people don't know that they exist, if they don't see them off the side of the road, you know, obviously people are not driving in there as often as they are to McDonald's, because they're not aware that it exists, and it's not something that stands out to them on their drive. And a lot of people don't realize that that's a thing. You don't realize it because you're not thinking about marketing every day. But it's very evident in that those small businesses don't grow very much. They typically stay around the same size. They don't expand. They don't, you know, they don't move into a larger market. They don't have multiple locations in some cases. And a lot of that doesn't have to do with at all with their work ethic, with the product they sell, with the quality of service. And that goes for Q's as well. You know, I have friends, and I don't know much about Q's, to be honest, and I'll say that right out loud, but I have friends who come to me and say, "This is the greatest Q I've ever played with. The finish on it, all of the bells and whistles are just immaculate." And I'm like, "I've never heard of them." And they might say to me, "Well, you're not a Q guy." But also, if I've never heard of them and I've been in the industry, even though I'm not a Q guy, that says a lot about their marketing. They might have the best hitting Q with the best barrel and joint, you know, combination ever. But if people don't know about it, if people don't know about your service, if you don't stand out amongst the hundreds of other Q makers that are in the world, if you don't set yourself apart in some way, you're going to find yourself doing the same thing every year and not growing. And that might be okay. Maybe that is what you want. But most people do want growth. They do want to see movement in their business. And usually marketing is at the very, very, very bottom of people's priorities. And that always, you know, boggles me. And that's something that you learned in college. Like, look, you're going to encounter small businesses that think that they don't have the resources to market their product. But guarantee you they're going to have resources for things within the business that don't really make a lot of sense. And so investing a little bit at a time, little by little, you'll realize that your marketing efforts go a very, very long way. I can't speak to that enough, because it's hard to get people to understand and appreciate that. But the example of driving down your street and seeing those small businesses, like that's something that we all experience. And you may not realize that that's what's happening in your brain as you're driving by, but I guarantee you that you don't think about those small businesses as much as you do about the big ones. And those big ones don't have great product usually. They just have great marketing.
Everybody knows McDonald's sucks. I agree.
Well, you're not getting sponsored by McDonald's now, to say that.
Well, you know what? If I turned away a few sponsorships to this podcast, I would also turn away McDonald's and not feel bad about it at all.
Well, that's good for you. You've got a moral compass, at least.
Not much of one, but a little bit of one.
Yeah. And part of the appeal, and this is something I've come to realize since I've been in the industry, is that the appeal of our sport it's like a double-edged sword. One side of that sword is that it's very, very dark, very mysterious. People think of it, I'm talking about how the general public perceives our sport. Very dark, mysterious, smoky rooms, a lot of shady things happening, and obviously these are, you know, not accurate, or maybe that they are in your area, or somebody who's listening might think, oh yeah, that's totally my pool hall. But for the most part, we know that players are not usually, or not for the most part, shady characters. They're not out to steal you and rob you blind by playing a game of eight ball. It's not. Pool rooms are not smoky anymore. They're not. We're not living in the 60s and 70s anymore, where that may have been the case. And so that's one side of the coin where like the entertainment industry always presents the sport that way. Whenever, and I always say this, but whenever you see a pool table in a movie or a TV show, something bad is going to go down. You never see anything good happening around a pool table in movies, TV, or in Hollywood. And that is part of the appeal. That's kind of what brings people to the pool hall, right? But that's a double-edged sword, because the bad side of that is that people don't take it seriously. They don't perceive the industry as something that is a sport. They don't see it as something that is worthy of sponsorship. They don't see it as something that is worthy of their time and effort as an investment. And so it has a good and bad side to the way that the industry perceives it, at least here in the United States. And I think you would probably agree that that's generally how the public perceives us.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at any of the, like you said, if there's a pool table involved, there's either a hustle that's going down or there's some sort of violence that's usually going to come out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I always try to tell people that, you know, you got to stop using that word hustling in the industry. Like, it doesn't really happen anymore. And maybe it does, but like the other day I was at the bar that I usually play at, and there's this kid. He comes out and we're, you know, having a smoke, and he tells us all, oh yeah, man, have you been to this one bar over here? And I used to hustle when I was in college. And like, that's the sure sign you don't know what you're talking about. If you use the word hustle and you use it openly like that, like, he's just trying to impress somebody or impress this girl or something. And we have to stop using that term internally. If Hollywood is going to use it, we can't really control that. Internally, let's stop throwing that word around. It's so archaic. It's so unprofessional, and it really hurts. We're trying to elevate the sport to a professional level and to be recognized as a sport. We can't do that when we keep using that word in our branding, our marketing, or in any regard. I think that it really keeps us from moving forward. And that might be, you know, an opinion that not everybody agrees with, but I can guarantee you that Hollywood is never going to change the perception of that industry until we perceive our own perception and really market ourselves in a way that we want the rest of the world to perceive us.
I agree entirely. So I guess at this point we can kind of start to wrap up this discussion. You still, I do not believe, have given your website or where you can find all of your products or even the actual full lineup of what your products are. So why don't you talk a little bit more selfishly about your products and your website now?
Sure. Yeah, you can find me at fastandloosedesigns.com. That's fast, the letter N, loose, designs with an S.com. And I'm sure Nate will provide a link once this podcast goes up.
I certainly will.
But really, right now, I'm, yeah, And it's mostly things like, you know, t-shirts. I've got, I think over 50 or 60 different designs, and I'm coming out with more. Also sell hats, you know, baby apparel. I sell like, onesies, women's apparel from tanks to shirts. And I even sell like mugs. There's a lot of products that I still want to, you know, put out there, but for now, that's what I currently have. And so, yeah, you can find me there. And that's really what my company is focused on at the moment. And if I can give a few shout outs, I'd give a shout out, you know, first and foremost, my wife. She's been the most supportive while I work in the industry. And I think, she would agree that it was a fun ride, and it still is a fun ride to be in the industry, but not to the extent that it was before. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the Mez West Bay Tour. If you're on the West Coast or you are thinking about taking a trip to the West Coast, there's still a few stops that we have. Our next stop will be October, I want to say, 13th to 14th. We'll be at Diamond Billiards in Fresno, California. It's a two-day event. We'll be playing nine ball, handicapped with Fargo rating enabled. So if you'd like to learn more information, you can always check that out at MezWestBayTour.com. And obviously, it comes with that is Mez Cues. They are the title sponsor. And so Mez Cues, is actually my playing cue. And actually, tomorrow, I'm finally getting my Ignite shaft. So I'm pretty excited about that. So let's give a shout out to Mez Cues and the West and West State Billiards. They are also a title sponsor. They are a distributor over here in the West Coast as well. And lastly, I'd like to give a shout out to anybody who promotes pool. If you're an event promoter, if you are a director, if you are, you know, somebody who is a streamer, if you promote pool in any way, keep it up. And hopefully the tips that I've given will help you to give you a couple more tools in your bag to help you understand how to better market the game and market your event, more importantly.
I hope that anybody who is listening that does promote the game does actually listen to what you said for some of the stuff. I know that I got a couple things out of this podcast for what I'm going to do with the podcast in the future, so I thank you for that.
Awesome. And yeah, in the future, I'll let you know about some other promotional things that we've got going on with Fast Moves Design. So I appreciate all the time, Nate. And actually, one last thing, I'd like to let Nate listeners know that on my website, you can use the promo code QUITUP, all lowercase, all one word, and you can get 15% off your purchase off of anything on the website when you use that promo code.
Awesome. And if you haven't been over there yet and you're a listener to the podcast, you have to swing over there and at least look at them. You don't have to necessarily buy them, but you have to look at them because there's some really funny t-shirts that he has on his website that are they're pretty genius.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. And at this point, Chris, I will thank you one last time for coming on to the podcast and chatting with me today.
Thank you so much, mate. I'll talk soon, man.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.